People know that Pedro likes to sing.
I have been known to sing a little diddle here and now and then. Yes.
And favorite genre, country.
I've done a little bit of country, a little bit of show tunes,
90s hip hop.
a little Ice Ice Baby. Next time we're together, maybe a little karaoke, a little dance. All right, okay?
Yeah.
Welcome to this episode of The Team Around the Table. I'm thrilled to be talking about partnerships, excellence, continuous improvement, and I'm joined today by Kristen Landis from our Bank of America relationship. Kristen, welcome. It's so great to have you today.
Thanks, Pedro.
So, Kristen, we've known each other for a few years. We'll just call it that, right? So I know we've worked together directly. Now I get to work with you as my client and really enjoy that experience together. And I'd love for you to give a tiny bit of background on kind of your journey going from provider side to client side and kind of what's that meant for you?
A lot. So a lot of twists and turns. So spent better part of 15 years working with Jones Lang LaSalle, Cushman & Wakefield before coming into client side. At that time, it was really decision point of how far do I want to continue to stay in depth with IFM,
yeah.
Right? Versus where do I want to continue to delve into more breadth, right, about our businesses and now really oversee 6X, right? I mean,
yeah.
So big change over the course of time. I think my background of inherently how I used to work on the provider side does me really well now just because of rolling up sleeves. There's no starts and stops to how we need to integrate and deliver our businesses so they are seamless in everything that we do.
Yeah. You made this transition into working on the client side in a very interesting time as far as economy, world happenings. I think one of the main challenges I talk with you about once in a while is how do you make sure that the real estate actually is that attraction or retention tool for clients? And I know you have one of the big iconic office towers now here in Chicago that you get to call home. What is that doing for the business?
The tower was essentially over a decade in the making. We used to have 2 million square feet, around 20 locations in downtown Chicago. So just very bloated at one point in time. Took a lot of contraction, optimization over the period of time to really be primed and ready to go for that tower and moving in September of 2020. So not only at that time,
yeah.
You know, we made decisions about growth, location, you name it, right, before the pandemic had even hit. And then you're moving people who you'd already packed them up out of their prior location, right? And then when they're coming back, they're coming into a brand new tower.
Yeah.
For us, that journey is one of flight to quality, and you're seeing that all across the industry right
yeah.
now. And those are not small investment decisions, and they take a long time to put into motion. And I think for us around flight to quality, it was a huge piece of not only, you know, what did we not have that we wanted in the new tower, not only for ourselves with client entertaining space, being able to continue to modernize and have the sophisticated look and feel that we were used to, but then the other element of how do you still maintain that history? You know, we were in an Art Deco building, we were in Baker's
yeah.
Row, and how do we get a new tower that is advantageous for our employees too? So proximity to places like Ogilvy, Union Station,
yeah.
the L lines, right? That work-life balance piece and how do people come to your office, right? Are just part of that amenity and site selection that go into the remaining parts of the design, right? Like how are we actually making our spaces suitable to the types of work that our lines of businesses are doing within it?
That's the big challenge. The building has to support how the business works,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's this partnership between HR, between real estate, between the line of business, all these multiple stakeholders. And I know at Bank of America, you guys now report into the HR organization.
Yeah.
How has that shaped kind of these conversations and how real estate's used?
So certainly there's an improved partnership there now.
Yeah.
So workplace excellence, we are now under the same umbrella, which is super helpful for ensuring that we're understanding occupancy and utilization interplay that comes through employee engagement, employee
yeah.
satisfaction, right? We're getting all those surveys. I think that goes a long way in how that is influencing our design guidelines. And then there's kind of this other sweet spot, right, of how are you continuing to actually encourage your employees to come in? And so that looks a little differently in a place like 110 North Wacker than it does in the rest of the part of the portfolio, either through amenities, partnerships with landlords, you name it. It's not just the occupier that is supporting our tenants and wanting to be there and making buildings sticky. It's also, what is the landlord doing for you? And this only became really real for us recently when I saw some stats that came through from our landlord that they put on nearly 100 tenant events last year in one tenant or blacker alone. And they were heavily focused towards minority, women-led businesses, philanthropic initiatives behind the scenes, right? So when you think about it from an industry standpoint, it's everybody that is really leading the charge to make sure that that really is the best building or we are continuing to get tenancy.
So let me pull on that thread a little bit about being ready for the occupants and the space. I think some people may think, hey, you built this big building, kind of the old Field of Dreams, build it and they come type of conversation. Mm-hmm. I know it doesn't happen easy that way, and you're always continuing to have to iterate. How do you get people in the space? So what does that look like day to day?
So it's an evolution that absolutely happens, and you want people to be interacting with your space. That's how, you know, observational patterns happen, right? That's how all of a sudden our workplace standards change. And whether that's influencing things like wayfinding or influencing amenities within our work pantries of, you know, additional hot options, convenience things for employees. Price points is a really big thing, right? How are we continuing to make sure that balancing that employee satisfaction?
I hear you. I've gotten lost in your building, so I'm glad the wayfinding is on the list right now, right? So, yes.
So I think all those things really play into how do we, you can't just spend a whole bunch of money, build it and they will come.
Yeah.
We've had examples where you build it and they still won't come. So I think that what you're seeing not only from the flight to quality conversation, but even now about how do you continue to one up yourselves, right? It's never really over. We are still not out of the position where you're competing with folks' home.
Yeah, I think that's true for everybody, right? I mean, coming out of the pandemic, it was around, okay, I have better monitors and screens at home, right? I can get more done. The commute time, right? I can use that time to work. It's a big conversation point for everybody. And trying to make sure that that real estate is actually driving the business is such a big piece. You have so many stakeholders though. At home, I got two stakeholders, got a wife and a son who are never on the same page, right? So I can't imagine the multiple stakeholders that you have between an HR organization, multiple lines of business. How do you navigate that?
I think that that's most telling, especially when we talk about portfolio optimization. Some of that is not only just you're in a building and let's get aligned on strategy. So some lines of businesses can and can't based on public and private compliance reasons. There are some that are willing to do it, but not if everyone. There's also the typical seat releases that are happening. And so as much as what that is, the really small microcosm that exists within the bank of, I just need to get an employee to sit in this location can really take a lot of finesse behind the scenes, right?
Like last time I was in town, you and I were complaining about how much the cost of like going out to eat is happening. And as we see that, I'm seeing the cost of construction, everything that you guys are doing just kind of skyrocket. How are you as a company dealing with just the increased cost basis that's happening?
Let's talk about OpEx. So if we think about the drivers there, especially as they maybe relate to the behavioral patterns employees, right? We are continuing to make sure that we're, you know, going back to our vendor partners and it's what does best in class look like. Yeah. We're not going to reinvent a new way to slice bread, but there are elements here around how can we optimize schedules still along with higher wages, inflation, all those other kind of geopolitical things that are happening around even just production and where are we actually going to source products from. So I think you're going to still have these things that are controllable and then the things that are unfortunately not controllable.
Everything's changing around us, right? That change management process, it's not easy to get through that. So what challenges does that provide, or how do you make sure the change management is clean?
We've got 8 lines of businesses that have 8 very different identities in terms of not only what it is that they do, what is their customer pool, how do they do it in the office specifically of making sure that they're delivering all of their performance objectives required for their business. And so we do have a very rigorous change management process that goes into place, and C&W is really critical in helping us deploy that, especially when we're dealing with programming changes. You know, when we're seeing changes that are employed from going to one-to-one seating to free address, right? What does that look like? What do new space types look like? We've got a design lab in Charlotte where we have an opportunity to roll out very different furniture configurations, different setups for workstations. How can we now bring that into the workplace? And those fits don't necessarily mesh with every single line of business that we have. What works for Merrill does not necessarily work for maybe our consumer part of the business. But all of that handholding of sometimes we spend a lot of money with architects and design firms and, you know, third-party subject matter experts, right? And just because sometimes that it's an industry trend or it seems as if a lot of entities are using that way, are financial institutions using it that way? Are certain lines of businesses using it that way? And so I think that trial and error period for us is iterative for us as well, because sometimes it does work for one, it doesn't work for other, or hey, how can we actually deploy that in a really flexible kind of way for us? I think all of that comes to a head as part of that change management, just because everyone is an individual and they like sometimes how they used to operate in their space, and now they're having to reinvent what their routine looks like.
How does that play out differently between large people centers versus smaller communities, smaller asset types? Because you can get into this place of, well, I don't get that benefit because I'm this part of the bank, particularly in a smaller community. How do you guys navigate that conversation and challenge?
So I think a common theme that we hear everywhere is we want more private space. I think, you know, just we talked about, you know, people working from home, right? Sometimes it's just simply coming off the floor and having a conversation, or you've got managers that are sitting on the floor. How are they having a delicate conversation with an employee? They want to be able to have a phone room to be able to pop into. They don't need a meeting room all day. So I think that's one example where when we think about how do we dial up the way in which we are programming today and ratios between office and workstations, that's a really key element for us. There's other spatial types that we have, like what we call the living room. And the living room is a little bit more of an informal seating element. Yeah. It plays well with more of our non-client facing lines of businesses than it does client facing. So there is kind of this appropriate, I think, line that we have of what is more kind of business table stakes in a particular environment that we're in versus where can we be a little bit more informal? Where can we be a little bit more casual based on the type of business that we do?
If I can kind of pivot a little bit into environmental conversations, I know Bank of America has set some pretty big goals when it comes to the impact that they make on the environment themselves. What challenges do you see in getting these energy and environmental type of goals across the line?
We have found probably the easiest way for us to really think about reduction of energy is actually reduction of our footprint.
Yeah.
We used to be at 125 million square feet. We're down 60 million square feet. That has a huge influence, but it's also not realistic or feasible for us to think that that trend will obviously continue. Yeah. So, you know, that aside, it's also landlords. 75% of our portfolio is leased. And so there's a huge reliance that we have around landlords, especially in our people centers, to be able to, you know, move towards recycling or composting and the footprint that that takes up within their docks. Or, you know, 110 North Wacker is a great example too, is that we got the landlord on board and we're going to do composting next year. So huge step.
Yeah. Huge step. Yeah. I was on actually this morning with another client and talking about some headquarters buildings where they're moving, trying to get the recycling up to 40%, right, within their spaces, doubling basically over the next 12 months. And excited for those journeys, right, but lots of effort. But love the conversation that it takes a village for us to get on board, because so often landlords have been hesitant to even share that data and go to those programs. But I think they understand for key occupiers, they have to be able to be willing and be mature to kind of get the data to all of us so that we can actually measure it and report out for all the reporting guidelines that we have to follow.
Totally. And the large people centers is where it's at, right? Yep. Needle moving locations. I'm not saying that our financial centers aren't going to make this big impact, right? Yeah. A lot of a little still adds up. But those are the locations where getting them on board during the negotiation process of green leasing elements is a huge one. So we go back to the 75% of our portfolio is leased. Well, the strategy may not jive with the cost of a ultra-efficient piece of equipment, right? Based on the payback, what's going to really happen in the 10 to 15-year period of time? Are we going to even be there in 10 to 15 years in order to get that investment back as part of it? And we're not really on the bleeding edge of what we want to install in our locations either, right? Yeah. There's this kind of period of time that needs to come to market, demonstration of proof of what's happening with that equipment, and then time for that price point to come down for something that we want to invest in.
Actually, having some kind of ROI on these things is important, right? Because we still have to think about the other side, the shareholders of all of our companies who are paying for us to make good business decisions every single day.
The one most interesting, I think, fact that we had specific to our corporate social responsibility is that there are going to be limitations about what we can deliver in light of what's happening with AI and demand, especially for our online business practices. What we're seeing from energy driving in our data centers in and of itself is going to be really challenging for us to overcome in the rest of the part of the footprint.
Well, I'd love to dive a little bit into what's good partnership look like between a client and a partner organization. Talent has always been key. When you start looking at the talent equation, what are the things that you look for? What challenges do you see?
I think specific to Bank of America, there is always a really steep learning curve, not because we're so large and have many different lines of businesses. There's just a lot to pick up, and we are a very mature organization, right? Global, at scale, all those things play a role into what that looks like. So, you know, for somebody to really be passionate about taking on challenges, passionate about what that change management looks like, passionate about, you know, feeling really comfortable about ambiguous situations, right? Yeah. Navigating through that. I think the amount of resiliency that we require in people to be highly successful in that organization is because of that. I think a lot of recent conversations have been about how do we make sure that we're staying in the outsourcing bucket? We're not outtasking, we are outsourcing to experts. And so my expectation is that they are actually being able to challenge appropriately, right? How we do business, how our organization does things. And there's gonna be times that we can do something about that, and other times perhaps that we can't, right?
Exactly.
But it's not gonna be because we're just kind of blindly operating like lemmings, right? Like, we want that individual thought. We want innovation to be coming through. All those things are very real in making sure that we are looked at as being partners and collaborating appropriately.
So I'm hearing you say you need people with great experience and knowledge, mm-hmm. number one. Number two, you need people who are willing to challenge the status quo and be able to have a good, honest dialogue about it. Mm-hmm. And then you want people who are actually thinking proactively and getting in front of ideas and concepts to kind of help lead the way.
Yep.
Terrific. I mean, that I think that's a great way for us to think about all sorts of business, right? But I think supporting a large client like Bank of America to make sure that people are thinking about the same thing and are they're really trying to move the needle forward.
Yep.
That's great. When I think kind of great partnership, one of the things I think is important is proper governance. And with governance comes feedback. What's a healthy two-way feedback loop for you as a client?
I mean, I'm not shy about picking up the phone to anybody on the CNW
side. Never known you to be shy, that's for sure.
I don't think that the relationship is really any different than if you were an employee to a manager, right? And how are you providing timely feedback? How are you providing feedback that is direct, right? All those things of making sure that if it's a pain that you don't want repeated, if it's something that we know that we can easily make better, if it's the continuum of raising a bar of I want work product to look like X, all those things, they're not going to get better unless you voice the concern about it.
We're always striving for what's next, mm-hmm. right? Get in front of it.
Yep. For some of our tactics that I'm thinking about now, sometimes you're not going to get it right on the first time. And it's not because of anything that anyone is doing. It's just maybe the business wasn't ready for it. And then all of a sudden you've got one domino that falls. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, now this whole path has opened up about a strategy and the tactic, all because of, you know, this one movement now, this one pillar went that now allows us to go ahead and be creative in how we deploy solutions. So exactly to your point, there's going to be times where I even think about where we've been with third-party tenant space.
Yeah.
And do we really want to be a landlord? And, you know, things like that that have evolved over time where...
We've been talking about that for 15 years.
I know. And so there are times where we'll still kind of dabble in that space, but plenty of times where we won't. So, I mean, it's the same thing. People will bring that up as an idea or, hey, what do we want to do here? Can we do this? And the answer is sometimes, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. It's kind of, it all depends, mm-hmm. right? Every situation, where are we at today? What money is involved, what impacts it have on the business. There's so many parameters that you have to think about.
Yep.
So, Kristen, you're working with the people who have been working, some of them together for 20 years, right? And I mean, what are those partnerships and those people relationships? What's that mean to you and how does it impact the business every day?
So I think that transcends sometimes companies. So not only just from my background of being at JLL or being at CNW or now being with the bank or, you know, working with landlord entities. Like I think about our sale leaseback of 540 West Madison, you know, well over. And that was purchased essentially, came out of the bank's hand into new hands. You had an engineering team that transitioned over. So there's things that happen over the course of time that we're all still in the same business. Our world is incredibly small. So, you know, whether you're seeing them working on the same side of the aisle, whether you're working across the aisle from one another, I think, you know, that creates just a very kind of unique bond of everybody's in the trenches working together as part of that. So, you know, I think, you know, as much as what we are in a very, you know, rigorous environment. Obviously, there's a, you know, very serious nature to the things that we do day in and day out in light of everyone that we're dealing with in our stakeholder pool, we're all still very much real people at the end of the day. When people come into town and we're doing market tours or simply coming into town for offsites, right? Like that's where you're developing that really key forms of trust that when you talk about being able to provide open feedback, you don't get there overnight, right? Yeah. I mean, you're developing that in-person face-to-face time where you're starting to really understand what makes people tick. Everybody's bringing their whole selves to work and you're starting to understand what that looks like.
Well, I love that because at the end of the day, those relationships, as you said, gives the trust to be able to have the conversation, but also gives the grace when we need to understand, hey, something's going on there. Let's get back to that topic at the right time so we can actually be successful. So
assume positive intent. I mean, that's a huge one, right? And understanding what that trust looks like and knowing that there's a lot of competing priorities, right? And understanding that things don't always go as smoothly maybe as what we want, right? But we're trusting employers appropriately. We're trusting employers to receive feedback in order to improve. We're trusting in self-betterment of players, right? And how are we continuing to assess and make the business continue to be better?
Terrific. Kristen, I've really enjoyed getting together like this. I know we talk periodically, but to be able to have this dedicated time here in Chicago with you has been amazing. So I think the relationship with the bank and how you continue to make us better by iron sharpens iron that you and I always talk about, it's just been great to understand how we continually raise the bar.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining this episode of Team Around the Table.